the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. If you were watching television last week, you just might have heard this.
For the last 30 years, religion has exploded as a powerful political force, with an army of followers who share a deep dissatisfaction with modern secular society and a fierce determination to bring God and religion back to the seat of power. We call them God's warriors.
That was the title of the CNN three-night special, and it was Christian Amanpour, whose voice you just heard there, who put this together the first night, dealing with Jewish persons, the second with Islamic fundamentalism, and the third with what she would identify as Christian fundamentalism. In Israel, the case was that they are building the nation. In the case of Islam, you're dealing with the whole question of the political ambitions of modern Islam. And with Christianity, she was looking in particular at some of the ambitions of the new Christian right. We're going to be talking today about the word theocracy, because that's the word that gets thrown about again and again and again. And we're also going to be talking about the sense of equivalence, a very false and, I think, disingenuous sense of equivalence that is implied when you put together a series and you have Jews and Muslims and Christians and you just say, we're going to be talking about God's warriors. The topic today is, do you want a theocracy? If so, what kind of theocracy do you think you want? And is it fair to suggest that when conservative Christians are talking about our concerns in the public square, that what we're actually seeking is a theocracy? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Just a couple of days ago, we were discussing the Time Magazine cover story on Mother Teresa. Her book, Mother Teresa, Come Be My Light, is soon to be released. And, of course, Time Magazine's cover story by David Van Bima has to do with the fact that previously undisclosed letters from Mother Teresa to significant figures in her life reveal what has been described as a deep spiritual depression, a sense of God's absence, and a fundamental theological and spiritual crisis that many people find shocking. The response to this has itself become as interesting as Mother Teresa's disclosures now in this letter and book of letters coming out subsequent to her death. Time Magazine's cover story is entitled The Secret Life of Mother Teresa. Inside, the main article is entitled Mother Teresa's Crisis of Faith. Now, we talked about this, and I had a few major points to make, but I was invited to submit a column on this topic at On Faith, the project of the Washington Post and Newsweek magazine. And at my blog at albertmohler.com, I give you a link to go directly to that article, reprint the main portion of it. And I think if you have some questions about how to understand both the reality of what Mother Teresa is talking about in these letters and the controversy that now is animating so many people in the public square, I think you'll find some help there. But because the question comes again and again and again, let me just reiterate the major points I was trying to make. Number one, we as Christians need to understand that doubt is not always an enemy. Sometimes it's a friend. Doubt, in a healthy sense, can lead to a deeper embrace, a deeper spiritual maturity, but doubt can also be a form of sin. If that doubt is a fundamental lack of trust in God, it is a sin to fail to trust God. So when you talk about that kind of doubt that leads to a spiritual depression, just remember the heart of depression there is failing to believe that God is faithful to his promises. And that is in itself a form of sin. But intellectual doubt, questioning, that's not something the church should fear. Insofar as we begin to look at the facts, look at the truth, look at God's word, think these things through carefully and recognize that our fundamental trust is in God. And the fact that God would not mislead us in his word. And the fact that God is always faithful to his promises. The second point I wanted to make is that Christianity, the Christian gospel, comes down to justification by faith. But that faith that saves, which is faith in the Lord Jesus Christ and in his accomplished atonement, is not faith in faith. It's not like you have so much of this New Age conversation now where people say, I have great faith, which just means they have some kind of confidence. It's not faith in faith. It's also not faith in our own ability to be faithful. That's a very crucial point. We're not Christians because we believe in our faithfulness. We're Christians because we believe that Christ is always faithful. And when we come to him by faith, we understand it's not that we are kept by the power of our faithfulness. Instead, as the New Testament says, we're kept by the power of God. The other point I want to make here is that there are people who look at this and say, well, you know, Mother Teresa, you take this sense of spiritual depression and then you put it over against all the good work she did. And when you understand what she was really doing there in the streets of Calcutta, it's incredible to think of the ministry that she undertook there in that that seemingly God-forsaken place among seemingly God-forsaken people. The question is, was she doing that, many people are asking, because she felt herself unworthy of salvation? Very interesting question. Crucial question, isn't it? And it's just a reminder to us, and I'm sure I shock some people with what I say in my article. I say I am absolutely convinced I cannot read Mother Teresa's heart, but I can say that she is unworthy of salvation. How do I know that? Because I am unworthy of salvation. And every single sinner is unworthy of salvation. If we were worthy of salvation, it wouldn't be of grace. The Apostle Paul put it this way. He said, here is the sum and substance of the gospel, that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. He didn't die for those who were worthy of salvation. He died for those who were unworthy. That's the very nature of the gospel. That's what grace is all about. God was not obligated to save sinners. Christ was not obligated to die for sinners. He didn't say, look, they deserve it. He said, for the sake of my own glory, the Father said, I will send the Son. While we, as sinners, were yet sinners, Christ died for us. I can't read her heart. You will be able to read these letters in the book that is soon to be released. You can read a summary of this in David Van Bema's article, cover story in Time magazine. You can read my reflections on this by going to albertmuller.com. If you go there, you can get the link to On Faith, and when you go there, you'll see a robust conversation, and it really brings out all the, well, I'll let you define what it brings out. Let's just say it's a broad spectrum of opinion. You have Daniel Dennett, who believes that religion is and faith and Christianity, all these things are illusory anyway. The title of his essay is The Agony of Misplaced Ecstasy. You have others coming back to say, look, when it comes to Mother Teresa, she's just all the more to be pitied because atheists are writing in their columns in order to say this is just an example of the fact that that those who believe in God have a hard time convincing themselves that they really believe in God. Others are saying this wrestling with God is just a healthy thing. Others are saying you really can't know the truth anyway. So Mother Teresa shouldn't have been so agonizing about the question. Let's just come back and say her agonizing about the question is because she did at least understand this, and that is that the question is as important as the difference between heaven and hell, life and death for eternity. You go to albertmuller.com, that's M-O-H-L-E-R.com, and you will find links to all these articles. I think you will find it a fascinating discussion. One of the things you're going to find, by the way, is that this controversy about Mother Teresa brings to the fore, once again, one of the most acid pens in the Western civilization, and that is the pen of Christopher Hitchens, and he just spews his venom all over the place again against Mother Teresa. And I've been wondering over the last couple of days why he is so fixated on this kind of question. And it's because of this. Christopher Hitchens, whose book is entitled God is Not Good, he's one of the most militant atheists of our day. If anything, he's trying to top people like even Richard Dawkins in terms of their atheism. I think I've come to understand why he has to go at something like this. And that is, and this particular apologetic point was made by Thomas Aquinas way back in the Middle Ages. He said this, if even one person who believes in God is right, every atheist is wrong. That's a very interesting point. Just think about it for a moment. If even one believer is right, every atheist is wrong. Thus, if you're an atheist like Christopher Hitchens, you got to go after every believer you can find. Yesterday, and it seems that again today, the big topic in the news is Idaho Senator Larry Craig. We talked yesterday a bit about how Christians should frame some thoughts about how to respond to this. But let's get to the heart of the issue as it is now framed in the media, and that is this. What do we do with people who push family values in public but fail to live it out in private? Well, this is the deal. There is no doubt that Senator Craig should resign his office as United States Senator. There is no doubt that he has indeed shown himself to be unworthy of that office, and he has single-handedly destroyed his own personal credibility. But we need to understand in an issue like this that public policy and moral principle is not based, should not be based, in the ability of any single human being to fulfill that, or the willingness of every single human being to fulfill that. It sets a standard. If you don't have the standard, you can't possibly say that someone has fallen short of the standard. What I don't understand is how so many of the liberal media are now saying, this just shows that you shouldn't have standards anyway. We're going to come back to ask the question, is it a theocracy we seek? That's what so many on the left are suggesting, that what conservative Christians really are looking for, those who take these matters seriously, is the establishment of a theocracy in the United States of America. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Back with your calls. This is the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. I'll tell you right up front, last week all the white blood cells were ready. All the anti-immune system in evangelical minds was, this was very much active. Why? Because you had the advertising of this three-part series on CNN by Christiane Amanpour, God's Warriors. And when you saw it break down, it was either the setup for a very bad joke, like you have a rabbi, an imam, and a minister walk into a restaurant, or it was implying the worst kind of ideological equivalence. It turned out that the latter issue is really what we're talking about here, of course. You're talking about this issue of God's warriors, that's the language they chose, inflammatory language, in order to say that you have a Zionist building Israel, and you have Muslims waging a jihad, and you have Christians seeking to influence the public square, and they're the same thing. God's warriors. All she said are united in the fact that they are dissatisfied with modern secular society and have a fierce determination to bring God and religion back to the seat of power. Those words, as we heard at the very beginning of the program. The question is it at all accurate to say that what Bible-believing Christians are really about in terms of concerns for the public square, morality, law, and all the rest, is to establish a theocracy? I certainly do not want to establish a theocracy. I won't even speculate as to what you would say. I want to hear it from you. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Milwaukee, Michigan, where Jerry's on the line listening on the World Wide Web.
Hello, Wisconsin.
That makes sense, but my board said Michigan. I'm glad that you're in the right place,
okay.
Jerry. Go right ahead.
Well, yeah, I'm one of those secularists. I'm an atheist. And, well, for one, I don't equate Christianity with Islam. Islam is much more violent. It's a violent threat, and it's a threat to all Western civilization. But in terms of Christianity, what concerns me and other non-believers is sometimes the Christians just make appeals to the Bible when supporting laws or supporting institutions. They don't try to convince other people based on appeals to non-biblical sources. Because I believe that law should be based on reason and based on reducing harming one another's man. And it seems that Christians, conservative Christians, just appeal to the Bible, unfortunately.
Okay, Jerry, I appreciate your call. Let's try to track that down just a little bit. Let me ask you for a specific example. I'm not even going to debate your point at this point. I just want to find you. Give me a specific example about the kind of law or issue of public policy you have in mind here.
Oh, well, I mean, there's many. The same-sex marriage, assisted suicide or right to die. There's laws on pornography. I mean, there's a bunch of laws. What I see Christians, they support certain laws, and they appeal to religious authority. I mean, if you don't want to do, like, if you don't want to commit to assisted suicide when you're old, that's fine. That's your religion. You believe it's against your God's plan. That's fine. But I'm not a Christian myself, and I would want to reserve the right to die any way I want to die when I'm old.
Okay, let me ask you just about the issue of marriage for a minute, Jerry. If you were to establish a law or an institutional structure in the law for marriage on the basis of reason alone, where would you think one would start?
Well, I think you would start with I'm also a humanist, and humanism is the idea that laws and institutions should really be built to further human happiness and guarantee rights, and I think that would be it. Guarantee human happiness and rights of one person marrying one other person that they love. Right there I would start.
And how would we know that human beings are distinct from the rest of creation in that regard?
Well, human beings are much more intelligent. They yearn for liberty. They yearn for rights at a degree that no other animal does, even chimpanzees. So, yeah, human beings are distinct because of that.
Okay. You know, you said something very interesting, Jerry. You said you're a humanist, something I hadn't heard before, and I'm always glad when you call. Would you not agree that humanism is itself a belief system?
Well, it's a belief. Well, it's, yeah, humanism is a philosophy. It's right. Any philosophy is a belief system. It's a belief system in terms of how laws should be structured, how society should be structured, that's centered on the needs of men and women. Yeah, so it's a belief system.
And it does have certain values. I mean, I read the humanist literature and all the rest. So I guess my point would be, why would we privilege a humanist viewpoint over a Christian viewpoint if you've got two citizens debating what the law should be in the public square?
Well, what you should do is that everybody, the Christian and the humanist, should accept the rights of others to, say, marry who they want. I mean, a Christian can marry who they want, and a humanist should be able to marry what they want. What should not happen would be to go into a church and say two Christians cannot marry each other. Now, that, I think that would be a violation. But
I appreciate that. Jerry, let me ask you, though. You know, you're saying something I'm not sure you mean to say, and I just want to give you the opportunity to clarify. You don't mean anyone be able to marry anyone they want to wish to marry, do you?
Marry a child, but you cannot sign a contract with a child. No, it would be a consenting adult. You would have to have basically a consenting adult.
And only two?
Make exceptions for incest because, I mean, there's the problems with genetics with incest. So you can make
only two consenting adults?
Well, I mean, if somebody wants to make an argument that why polygamy is good, I don't think it's good because I'm talking about equal protection under law to be able to marry one other person. Right now the law says you can marry one person the opposite sex. I just extended you could still marry one person, but they're of the same sex. Once someone wants to argue polygamy, then they have to give a strong argument.
Okay. Jerry, you're always articulate. Really appreciate your calling, and it's good to hear from you. I'd have to say I think you're being pretty arbitrary in drawing the line at two in terms of your equal protection argument, because I think someone else would come along and say equal protection under the law actually means I shouldn't be restricted to two. Very interesting point. Always appreciate your calls. Let's go to Alan calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Alan.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I was just wanting to make a comment that I think the fundamental difference here is that Christians may be about the transformation of society, but we believe that the way you transform society is by the transforming power of Christ to change people's hearts. And when those people are changed, then society will be changed. So we're not going to change society from the outside. We have to change it from the inside out.
You know, Alan, a very good point. One of the interesting questions in modern political philosophy is the distinction, for instance, between conservatives and those called neoconservatives. Conservatives believe that the culture determines the politics. Neoconservatives have argued that the politics can determine the culture. And that may sound like an academic argument, but it comes down to the fact that I, as a conservative, believe that the politics always reflects the worldview and the actual lifestyles and commitments of the people who create the laws. The politics can influence, but basically the culture determines the politics. Alan, you're absolutely right. The church's vocation is to preach the gospel first and foremost above all other things. And we've got to be very, very careful about the fatal error of moralism. And that is a fatal error in both directions. Number one, the church can delude itself into thinking that it makes persons good. The other error is that moralism can convince persons who are sinners that they are good. And that is a real problem. But, of course, the alternative to moralism is not an immoralism. It's an understanding that there are certain moral structures to which all persons are obligated. But it's Christians who understand that the law, as important as it is not supreme. God is. And the political forum, the public square, important as it is not ultimate. The church's first message is a gospel message about the transformation that comes through Jesus Christ for eternity. Is it a theocracy we want? Let's get down to the word and to what's really at stake. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'm Albert Mueller.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. I want you to hear something that if you listen to all or watch all three nights of the God's Warriors series by Christiane Amanpour on CNN, you probably had a pretty clear sense of what was going on. But I think in just less than 1 minute, you hear this interview she did in the third episode. This is where she's talking with Ron Luce of Teen Mania. And she has already talked about what she considers to be Jewish extremism and Muslim extremism. Now she thinks she's talking to a representative of Christian extremism, a Christian Taliban, she will actually insinuate. And I want you to hear the lack of understanding and what I consider to be a very manipulative insinuation in the course of this interview. This is Christiane Amanpour, CNN, interviewing Ron Luce of Teen Mania.
When I, you know, read that women have to wear skirts of a certain length and guys aren't allowed to, you know, go on the internet unsupervised, I mean, I think, you know, totalitarian regimes.
No, it's about learning to have disciplines that communicate purity. You know, the skirt's length are to keep guys from, you know, any man on the planet could be distracted, and we don't want to unintentionally create distraction.
But Ron, that's what the Taliban said. They kept women in their house because men couldn't be trusted around them.
Well, there's extremists. You came to our campus, they did, your team did. They could see that we're not extremists. Kids are normal and they have fun and they wear normal clothes. It's just not, they've not adapted, we haven't adapted the dress code to the sexualization that's happened in our culture.
Okay, just to unpack all that for just a moment, let's follow through what happened. Christiane Amanpour said, when she was talking to Ron Luce, she said that she had read in their literature that the girls and young women in their Teen Mania, that's a Christian ministry program, have to wear skirts of a certain length. Then she says that the boys and young men, they're not allowed to go on the internet unsupervised, clear reference to internet pornography and all the rest. And she says, and I think, you know, totalitarian regimes. What in the world are we supposed to make of that? It's a totalitarian regime that within a Christian church or a Christian ministry, you say women are to dress modestly and young men aren't to look at internet pornography? You know, my guess is there are an awful lot of parents who say, yeah, that's a totalitarian regime called my house. This is the kind of moral equivalence that that I really resent. And I you just have to wonder if there's any attempt at intellectual honesty going on here. And then it comes back to she asks questions about the purity and pornography and that kind of thing. And then she says, but Ron, that's what the Taliban said. Now let's rehearse the Taliban. The Taliban made it a crime for girls and women to be educated. They made it a crime for girls to read or to be taught to read. They would openly flog people. They openly executed people for such things. They arrested people and put them in jail and executed them for breaking their laws that went not only into the issues discussed here, but in all the rest. Ron Luce was not calling for anyone to be arrested. He wasn't calling for any government to adopt these policies. He was talking about the right of a Christian ministry to hold its young people to a certain accountability, and they voluntarily joined this ministry. And she said, again, that's what the Taliban said. That's why we're having this discussion. The insinuation here is that what Christians want is a theocracy like the Taliban, that there's a moral and theological and ideological equivalence between Zionism in Israel and the jihad of the Islamists and what conservative Christians are all about in the public square. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. That's the argument, by the way, that's really coming now from the political left. You have books like Kevin Phillips' book, the title of it, American Theocracy. The subtitle, The Peril and Politics of Radical Religion, Oil, and Borrowed Money in the 21st Century. Go figure how all that comes together in one subtitle. We're going to come back with your calls. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Rogersville, Tennessee, where Jonathan's on the line listening on WHCB. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that not to confuse theonomy with some of the other things that were exposed as far as Zionism and jihad, but I think in the words of Van Til, law and all of life comes down to either theonomy or autonomy. When you have the rebellion in the garden, it came down either to theonomy or man's way, which is autonomy.
Okay, Jonathan, you've opened a big can of worms here that is not innovation. It is not, you know, chasing a rabbit here. We need to come back and talk about what in the world these terms mean, and we'll do that right after this break. The big question is, does theonomy mean theocracy? The phone number is 877-893-8255. We'll be right back with your calls. Fascinating stuff here. We're going to go back to Jonathan calling from Rogersville, Tennessee. He was citing Cornelius Van Til, a Dutch theologian. He came to the United States, taught at Princeton, later at Westminster Seminary. The father in the United States of a movement known as presuppositionalism in terms of apologetics. I wrote about him in my PhD dissertation, but rarely hear about him on the radio. Jonathan, you said that as Van Til taught, there are only two forms of government. You said theonomy or autonomy. Theonomy being the rule of God, autonomy being the rule of reason. I am absolutely in agreement with you that the rule of reason can't get you very far. But let me ask you this. Does theonomy mean theocracy?
I think here we have to define terms. Theocracy in what the special was showing, which I saw the special, and their logic was just silly. To compare what we would consider as sincere Christians who take the Bible seriously and want to apply it to every area of life, to compare us to, you know, jihad or other types of religion.
Jonathan, just for the sake of time, let me get to the question that every secularist wants to ask you right now. And that is, do you believe that the Old Testament law about stoning disobedient sons should become the law of the land?
Well, I think the principle, God never changes his principles. I think the principle you find there of restitution, you find the principle, there has to be a principle of law. It has to, and all through scripture, you see that God is a God of restitution. God is not a God
but what does that have
of rehabilitation.
To do, what does restitution have to do with stoning? We got to get, just for the sake of time, I got to bring clarity here. Would you want a disobedient son stoned or not in the law?
Well, that's a good subject for a lot of debate.
Yeah, but that's exactly what people are insinuating when they call for theocracy. Now, the word theocracy, here again, you say the definition is the issue. Of course it is. Theonomy, yes, the rule of God. I believe that absolutely every Christian, if he or she really understands what's at stake here, has to understand that theonomy is the only alternative to autonomy. But we understand that God's theonomic rule is through his will, through his word, first of all, in the church, and then over all of creation, but not, I would argue, through the institution of the law of Israel under the Old Covenant as the mandated law for the state. I think that's the difference between that age and this. Jonathan, I do appreciate your call, and I appreciate the fact that someone somewhere in the world today mentioned Cornelius Van Til on the radio. Something's got to be right if we're talking about some important stuff like that. Let's go to Peter, calling from the Netherlands, listening on the World Wide Web. Peter, go right ahead.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Muller. I'm very thankful to call. I'm very thankful to hear your program, writing my final thesis at this late hour. I had a comment to make, two comments, actually. The one is that as Christians, we have a calling, really, to call out to the government to obey God's laws because, well, God is the God of the entire universe. On the other hand, we also have also the calling to respect and be obedient to the government and respect the divine right of every man to order their houses according to their own desire. And, which in my sense, but what I think is the biggest problem is that it's so unclear. We have this neutral society above us, which we partake of as Christians, and which seems so we are taken up in that and being made a part of it. It would be a lot clearer if there would be just one ruler we could talk to as Christians, but It's just one big mess, I think.
You know, Peter, as I'm listening to you, I really appreciate you calling. It's great to hear from the Netherlands, and especially since the Netherlands, as a nation, has a history of really struggling with this very question. After all, you're the birthplace of Abraham Kuyper and so much of the Christian democratic theory of the 20th century. Abraham Kuyper was himself a theologian of the Dutch Reformed tradition. He was also the prime minister of the Netherlands between 1901 and 1905. Peter, do you hold to yourself to that kind of political philosophy, or what are you suggesting?
Well, I really respect more the theory of divine right. I would go back to that as the first principle. I've read Burke. I'm a law student myself, and I've read Burke and read Filmer, and in a certain sense, I would follow divine right to a certain extent. But not in the sense that a king is a father of his people, has all divine right taken up in himself, but
right.
That every man has a divine right over his house, and that a society being built of families and houses under different heads is built up from that.
Peter, I really appreciate your call. Wow, I just have to tell you that I'm taking some delight right now in imagining people all over America wondering how in the world they all of a sudden heard some of the things that they've heard just in the last hour because they never heard them before. That's part of what makes this show fun. You know, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you what you heard. What you heard from Jonathan and Peter are some of the biggest issues of Christian debate and Christian struggle to understand the relationship between the church and the society, law and the law of God, secular law. And what you heard from Peter, by the way, it's his articulation of a natural right theory, which is the very core of what used to be called conservatism. I mean, that's what you have. He mentioned Burke. That's Edmund Burke, who is in many ways the ideological father of the entire conservative movement. And without something like that, it's very hard to explain why there is present in our society and must be present in any healthy society certain structures of authority through which God gives not only structure, but law and meaning and limitation and boundary and justice and righteousness to a society. And so great stuff. Peter, thank you so much for calling, especially from the Netherlands. And God bless you as you're up late writing your dissertation. Let's go to Jake calling from Tampa, Florida, listening on WTBN. Go ahead, Jake.
Hey, Dr. Moore. I couldn't agree with your last caller and Johnny more. I just wanted to comment that you know, I saw the programs and Christiana Mompour has an agenda, and she's trying to expose extremism. And I'm a Christian, and I, you know, pay particular interest to the Christian extremist, you know, platform she was trying to create, falsely, I believe, as you stated before, especially by the use of that young man with T-Mania. But she's pushing the moral relativism issue, and, you know, it's rampant out there. And we as Christians can only hope, as your screener mentioned, about how that turns over to our politicians who we hope represent us properly. We can only do that, just hope. We can control our sphere of influence, which is our families and our communities. As it pertains to representational government, we can only pray and leave it up to the Lord. The Lord uses secular leaders as well as godly leaders, and we just have to have faith and live by God's standard. So.
But Jake, I really appreciate what you're saying here in terms of the fact that Christians have to show up in these debates, making these decisions in the voting booth or in the public square as Christians. I'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment. This has been a fascinating conversation from literally across the world. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back, folks. We've been wading through some fairly deep water over the last few minutes, which is fun. Let's try to bring some clarity and closure to the conversation here. Not that we can put a period at the end of the sentence and say we're done with this, but so that we can move the conversation on to the next step. All this began by looking at the Christiane Amanpour three-segment series entitled God's Warriors, in which there was not an absolute equivalence made between Jewish and Islamic and Christian traditionalists. But there was a de facto equivalence made, and it came out in some rather eccentric and weird and, I think, unhelpful ways in the course of those three nights. It simply is not fair to say that Muslim extremists, such as the Taliban and Jerry Falwell and his moral majority were about the same thing, or that Christian conservatives now are about the same thing. That's just not at all fair. Secularists may try to put them all in the same category, but anyone with intellectual honesty is going to know that just doesn't work. Now, the word that's thrown at us is theocrat or theocracy. What you want to do is establish a theocracy. Now, an important footnote to this is that there have been some conservative Christians who've made that argument. A very small fringe group, some of them known as theonomists, and theonomists aren't the only people who believe in theonomy, but they made it a political philosophy, and certain Christian reconstructionists have called for basically a Christian civilization, which would mean that the law and the political structures would be those basically established in Scripture. And in order to come up with that, you've got to go to the Old Testament, and you've got to claim a continuing relevance for Old Testament law that I don't believe the New Testament claims. I think Reconstructionism is wrong theologically before it becomes wrong constitutionally. But the bigger issue is, do we really believe that any government can stand on a purely secular basis? I do not believe that it could, and I do not believe that the majority of the Founding Fathers believed that it could. I think you find this debated in the constitutional era of the 1780s. I think you find this certainly debated in the Federalist Papers. You find this debated during the time of the early Revolution and onward in American history. I do not believe that reason alone, autonomous reason, can be a stable basis for the laws, and I do not believe that even secularists can consistently suggest that it can. Everyone comes with a worldview. Every citizen should be free and responsible to show up in the voting booth and in the public square with that worldview. Christians should be honest to say, this is what our worldview is. We should be very, very careful to push, I believe, contend for the right kind of laws. That includes laws restricting behavior. At the same time, we have to be very clear that laws, even as they can restrain evil, cannot, as the Bible makes clear, make people good. Sinners find redemption only through the blood of the Lord Jesus Christ. No secular government can deliver on that promise, no matter how well structured. We'll continue this discussion in the future, and I'll be back tomorrow with you for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.